Geico presents sharing versus oversharing. Earlier this week, Claire Tippins shared a princess nickname generator, 3 pictures of her dog wearing a tutu, and 2 online quizzes, including, what candy is your dream castle made of? Claire, your sharing has tipped the sugar scale and turned into oversharing. But have no fear, princess. Geico has something worth sharing with your internet kingdom, like how you could save hundreds on your car insurance just by visiting geico.com. No magic wand required. Geico, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All 3 engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
I am the tire.
Hi, and welcome to Brain Healthy. I am your host, Jessica Aaronworth. And believe it or not, this is our 20th episode. Very, very exciting. With me today, I have emotional health and community advocate, Julie Erdman. She's joining me, and we are discussing how developing a community around your passion can make things fun and improve your emotional health. Hi, Julie. How are you today?
Hi, Jessica. I'm great. Thanks for having me on your show.
Thanks for coming on. Now, you have a really cool website called Trying, T-R-I-I-N-G, to be athletic.com.
That's right.
Tell me a bit about how this came about.
Well, so it's T-R-I because it's like triathlon. And so you knew me as a child. And so you, of all people, know how I was not athletic growing up. And then
I think you were a bit more athletic than me.
Maybe we were about equal. So just not coordinated. We did meet at sports camp, which I think is actually funny now that I think about it, because neither of us was into sports.
Yeah, that is funny. So for those of you who don't know, which are probably all of you, Julie and I have been friends since the age of 9. But what I didn't know was, you know, the stories she is going to share with us today, even though we've known each other since we were 9 years old, you know, we've been in touch and out of touch, and I see your stuff on Facebook, and you know, I see what you're up to on Facebook and social media and stuff. But the stories we're discussing today, I had no clue about until we started really talking about it, and until I kind of, you know, had the show and started discussing emotional and mental health in a bigger way. So sorry, I cut you off there.
Yeah. No, that's fine. Yeah. I mean, social media is superficial, right? So you're going to share things that, or for me, I'm going to share things that I don't care who knows, you know, whether it be friends, family, potential employers, past employers, you know, that sort of thing. I tend to play a lot of things close to the vest, but the website, it's actually a blog. And so when I moved to Seattle, I started working with this group of women. And one of them one day said, "Hey, let's do a triathlon." And I said, "No, thanks. That's not my thing." And she said, "No, it's a really supportive one. It's, you know, it's for women, all women, anybody can do it." And I was like, "Yeah, but I don't swim." And she said, "No, it's totally fine. Like, you get in the water and they have these lifeguards on, you know, surfboards and kayaks, and you can swim up to them and take a break." And I was like, "Oh, maybe." Like, the last time, you know, I really swam, I was 13, and it was for a bronze medallion, and then I stopped. So I really didn't swim anymore. And she said, well, if that doesn't convince you, they have these lifeguards in the water that swim, you know, back and forth, and they have pool noodles, and you can just grab a pool noodle, and they're called swim angels. And I was like, wow, swim angels, that sounds amazing. If I could just grab a pool noodle and it would be totally fine. I was like, maybe, but I don't ride a bike. So that was another thing. Like, I hadn't been on a bike since I was about 12. And then I don't run. And she's like, well, you can just walk. Like, you don't have to run. It's 3 miles. It's fine. So she convinced me because everybody else was doing it. And I totally, like, went for the peer pressure. Went home and told my husband, I'm going to do a triathlon. And he's like, you're crazy because you don't do any of these things. And so I re-explained to him, you know, all the things that I could do. And it would be fine. And of course, I didn't really train properly. And so I wasn't successful that first triathlon. I barely made it out of the water. And that was with the swim angel, like, basically carrying me along on a pool noodle for most of the swim. And then I got hypothermia and kind of like collapsed. And so that for that year. I went to the hospital and they're like, you're dehydrated and you're really cold. So then it was kind of a gut check time for me. I was 34, I think. And I had to sort of make a decision, like, if I decide that was it, then I'm letting this define me as that person who fails, you know, like, You don't even try because you always fail. And that was kind of like my mantra growing up, like, don't try because you're going to fail. And so I was like, okay, I have to make a decision. And so I thought, now, you know what, maybe I can do this. And my husband said that he would train with me, which was great. But also, like, he grew up on a cottage swimming in the lake, and he used to bike all over the city before he had a car. So for him, like, training was sort of like no big deal, which it was for most people, right? And that was the thing. I was like, why is it so hard for me and so easy for everyone else? So I did train, and I went back the next year with one friend, and I got a wetsuit, which made all the difference because it's very warm and it's very buoyant. And so you can just sort of like float in the water if you can't swim. And so I finished the race, and we went out for breakfast. I don't think it was after that race. I think I went and then did like a half marathon. And my husband was like, you know, you should do a blog. This was like at the height of blogging. Everybody was blogging. And there were a couple that I really liked. One of them was Cake Rex. And it's just like, people who, you know, you go and you order a cake, comes back and it's like really messed up. And so I really liked the writing style, you know, like you say, put what's on this, the picture that's on this key fob or whatever, and they put the key fob picture on the cake. and another one was called Hyperbole and a Half. And it was just like kind of crude stick drawings, and I just loved it. And he said, you know, you do that. You just draw stick figures. And I was like, maybe there's something to that. And so I put up one post, and then I was just like, this is kind of fun. And so I kept doing it. And then, you know, it started with me relating like the beginning stories. And then I just sort of kept going, and that's how it started. It was, you know, kind of my husband's thing.
So you became an artist and an athlete in one fell swoop.
Kind of, yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Oh, I also too, like, the triathlon thing was the big sort of push. But so I did, now I'm going to forget the order, but I think I did a half marathon before I think I finished the triathlon, I think. And that was another big, like, I don't know if I can do this. And around like mile eight, so a half marathon is 13.1 miles. And at the 8.5 mile marker, I was like, I am done. Like, I just want to stop. I'm going to sit down and like, I'll let them come get me. And I was like, you know, again, that would just be like, of course, like just being right. That person of no, I can't do this. And I was like, okay, think about it. You're in the middle of like nowhere. You're on an empty highway. Nobody was around me because I was one of the last people. And I was like, just make it to the next water station. Just get to the next water station. And then see how you feel. And there were water stations every mile. And that's how I finished. I was like, just get to the next water station. And then I was done.
And I think that's an awesome metaphor for life, right?
Yeah.
Because I think
what
we do so much is we have these, you know, we know where we, well, sometimes we know where we want life to go, but the thought of getting there is just so overwhelming.
Yes.
And it really is. It's breaking it down into small little pieces, and you put one step in front of the other, and you keep on going. Because when we
and
think
that is
too
really,
big,
sorry.
Nothing gets done.
Yep. Yep. And I think that was like a switch in my brain. Like, okay, you are a person that can do hard things. And the way to do it is to break it down into smaller things. And it like changed. It really did change my way of thinking about life in general, not just about running or, you know, racing. It was everything.
Right.
And that wouldn't have happened if this, you know, coworker hadn't like convinced me to do this triathlon.
Right.
Kind of crazy.
It is crazy. It's really neat how you know, everything that we do in life comes with a lesson and really moves us to a different spot or a new spot or a new way of thinking. Because I think the way we think in our world, the way a lot of people think, doesn't allow for. And I kind of say this with a grain of salt, but it doesn't allow for success. It allows for very negative thinking, and people get defeated before they even start.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I know. Yeah.
No, go ahead.
I know when I work with clients, I bring in, you know, in terms of emotional health, I bring in exercise a lot.
Right.
The focus is not necessarily just on mindset and shifting your thoughts and your beliefs and behaviors, but I also focus a lot on nutrition and exercise because you cannot be brain healthy without those components. You have to have a healthy physical, healthy emotional, and healthy spiritual practices in order to be completely brain healthy or healthy as a whole individual. So what would be your advice to someone who is just starting out? And I love your website, by the way. I just want to read what Julie has here on her blog. I call it a website. It's a blog.
Either way.
Join me on my athletic misadventures as I plunge into the world of triathlon and marathon training. I have never been proficient in swimming, biking, or running, but I decided, pretty much on a whim and a little peer pressure, to give it a go. I love that because I can relate to it.
Well,
so.
And I think it's, you know, what's so interesting is the, you know, a big thing for me with writing this, it really is taking control of like who I am and not, you know, I have a lot of shortcomings and I'm not talented in any of these things, But, you know, it sort of started as a, I'm going to make fun of myself first so you can't, you know. But it's really interesting when people comment, you know, about like, I feel the same way, like I never thought I could do this or that. Like, if you go and look, you know, if you ever go and spectate a triathlon or any kind of race, you're going to see people who, like, at first you might think, well, they have no business being there. Like, they don't look like they're in shape. They don't look this, they don't look that. But you don't know their story. You don't know where they started. And they might very well kick your butt, you know, in that race. Like, it's really inspiring to go and just see, like, what people can do, regardless of how they look or how you think they should perform. And,
right.
And I think it's true for me too. Like, I'm skinny and, you know, not athletic, and people call me an athlete and I'm like, I still don't think of myself that way. But, you know, you just get out there and you can train and you can do these things that your body can do. It's your brain that's trying to tell you you can't. So for people like just starting out, I think you have to figure out what you enjoy. You know, people who are like, I hate running and I'm doing it. Well, stop. If you hate it, stop. Because that's not gonna do you any good. Like, if you've given it a good shot and, you know, you've been able to run past 3 miles and you still hate it, then find something else that you're going to enjoy. Because otherwise it's going
to
be
punishment. I have to run past 3 miles to figure out if I like it or not?
Well, that seems to be the magic number for a lot of people. That was for me, for sure. And it's
sense.
Okay if it takes a while. You know, it took me several months to be able to run 1 mile without stopping. You know, it's not like an overnight thing. It's, you have to have, you, like we were saying, you have to have that big goal and chop it up into small bites. And, you know, I think for me, the another benefit of the website was that I found this community that I didn't expect to find, this online community of other bloggers who were, you know, either they were cartoon bloggers or workout, you know, exercise bloggers. Some of them have turned into real life friends. Like, one of my best friends I met through blogging. And she lives in Michigan.
And that, you know what, that's a really nice segue into the next topic I want to touch on, actually.
Great.
because the next big thing I hear from clients all the time is, and this is one of my big beefs, this has always been one of my big beefs, but, you know, in today's world, it is so difficult to meet people.
Mm-hmm.
And to meet people as friends or as, you know, outside of the online dating world.
Right.
And to find a sense of community. And we know that community is so important, again, to your emotional well-being and health.
Yeah.
And without fostering a community in your environment, you're really left with feelings of isolation and loneliness and sometimes, you know, not having a bigger sense of self. I think sometimes community helps us. We can't live and function without a community. And in today's world, communities get smaller and smaller. And I do know that Running For You has brought a huge sense of community. You've moved cities multiple times in short time frame. So you've had to meet new people. Tell us a bit about that.
So when I moved to Seattle, I wasn't doing any of the exercising, except like going to the gym, but I went with my husband. So it wasn't like we were going there to meet people. But, you know, I actually, leaving Seattle, which is where I was before I moved here to Los Angeles, was really tough because I finally felt like I had my people. You know, I had my running community. I had joined Girls on the Run, which is a program for elementary school girls. It's a youth I forget what it's called. It has running. It uses running as a vehicle, but the program is really about teaching young girls or any child who identifies as a young girl, actually, how to be in this world. So how to be a good friend, how to make healthy friend choices, how to deal with bullying, how to be, a person, an effective member in your school, in your city, in your country. You know, they really work on empowering girls to make healthy choices in their lives. And they start before puberty hits, you know, before middle school. So they try to get these girls before they really get sucked in to, you know, all that peer pressure. So it's a very cool program that I was really excited that I could be a founding member of their board for the town that I was in. And really felt like, okay, it's like, these are my people. We get each other. And then my husband got a new job and we decided we were going to move. And I was like, what am I going to do? I have no people there. and it took me a couple of months because I'm not an outgoing person. I went running, but running can be very much a solo thing. And then I finally decided I would join like a running / boot camp class. It was free. It was close to my house. And, you know, that was the kick that I needed to start developing my tribe, as my coach or like our teacher calls it. And, you know, it really makes a difference. And so I've gone out to a couple things I wouldn't normally go to, and then those people are there. So you do have to, like, you have to be willing to put yourself out there a little bit.
Right.
You know, you have to take that first step, and it may or may not work out. And that can be really hard. Like I said, it took me a couple of months to actually, like, push myself out the door. But from then it just got like easy. Like now I have people, and they're not like my super close friends yet, but at least, you know, I look forward to seeing them and we have lots in common, and, you know, it has potential.
Yeah. And I know, you know, where I am as well, it's easy to find a running group. You know, there's running shops that sponsor running groups.
Exactly.
But just it really seems that running on its own fosters more of a sense of community if you're looking for it than a lot of other things do. That's what I'm noticing.
Runners tend to be very welcoming, regardless of what level you're at. And I mean, I'm going to say it sounds cliche because I've heard it so much, but I think if you don't like run, it's not like, it's probably not cliche. And I know that like people can get annoyed by runner talk, but I think that's because there really is something special about it. You know, you're pushing your body to do things that you didn't think it could do. So that's one like positive thing. So you're changing your wiring in your brain to go, okay, I can do hard things. I can try new things. And then you have other people who are also doing the same thing. So you're having this shared experience of, wow, I just did something that was really hard. And then if you have like a running buddy, like a friend that you run with, you have conversations with them on long runs that you would never have with other people. And it's this huge bonding experience, you know?
Right.
And I'm sure there are other activities that people do, you know, if you go camping or you go hiking, I'm sure you get those similar experiences. It just so happens that
that's
true for running as well. Yeah. And, you know, you're struggling and you can encourage each other.
Right. I just want, if you have a question for either Julie or myself, please feel free to call us at 646-716-7979. I agree with that. And I think any way that you can go out and make connections, make community, this might have nothing to do with running itself, but it really saddens me because we don't have enough community in our society at this point. So it's nice to know that there's different branches and pockets out there that are working to create community.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And I also think that you can define what community is to you. Like, I get a lot of satisfaction out of my online interactions with people. You know, and I find I can be more myself online than, you know, face-to-face in general. I mean, there are people that it takes me a long time to get to the point where I can be truly myself with someone. But I feel like online, I'm freer to say things or, you know, make jokes or comments that it would take me longer to do in real life. I think as long as you are finding that fulfillment, whether it's online or in person or, you know, whatever activity, I think that's okay too. You know, and it is harder to be face to face with people these days. We do more online. So, you know, if you can use that to your advantage, I think that's good. And that's where the blogging, you know, community helped out. I mean, it's nice when I meet people in person and they turn out to be just as cool in real life as they are online. But then there's that pressure too.
Right.
Like, am I going to be as cool as I am online? Or are they going to be like, who is this person? Like, I'm more serious, you know. And the blog is interesting because I really do put myself out there in a way that I don't with my face-to-face interactions. So it's a double-edged sword for me because on the one hand, I'm being most myself when I'm making my blog posts, but then I'm like, you know, somebody like an acquaintance or maybe like family member through marriage will comment and I'm like, you read that. You know,
I find that interesting as well, though, because we do keep so much to ourselves and we never know when, you know, that time will come where you post something from deep within and it resonates with someone and really helps someone else out. I think we tend to keep things secret too much. And I think that goes back to lack of community. And it becomes important to really discuss hard things so people don't feel alone, so they don't feel they're the only ones, and so they do feel like there's support there.
Yeah, and it's really interesting the way, like, I started it out my website just as a way to tell my funny stories, because I was like, look at how ridiculous this is. Like, look at what I'm doing. Isn't this ridiculous? Like, I don't know how to ride a bike. I don't know how to swim, you know? But the response that I got back was much more like what you've said, like it resonates with people and like they find it, you know, they'll say like, it's so inspiring that you can do this, or, you know, just the encouragement of like, wow, that sounded really tough, but way to persevere. And it made me look at it differently too, of like, oh, it's not just about like making fun of myself and these, because on the surface, like they are funny stories and that's why I tell them.
Right.
But it is interesting that why I'm putting them out there is not necessarily what people are getting out of them. I mean, I do get those comments too, like, this is really funny. Which is good, because that's my main point. I want to make people laugh. but it has been really just interesting, you know, when people, and then that reflects back on me of like, oh, yeah, maybe I should be looking at that differently too. Like that is a big accomplishment,
right.
You know, because it's very easy to minimize accomplishments. I think we all do that.
Yeah, and you can't do that.
Yeah.
Each accomplishment and it make it what it is. It's great.
I will say this though. Having an online community is great. Having, you know, any community is great. Having like this type of, let's say, running community, you get people of all levels, which means inevitably you get people who are better than you. And that can be tricky because I'll say like, I just finished a marathon and it took me 5 hours and whatever minutes. And I'm proud of myself because I finished a marathon and a marathon's really hard and I've never run a marathon before. And then I see somebody else post like, I just did my 12th marathon and I did it in 3 hours and 23 minutes. And I'm like, oh, great. Good for you.
And I think,
you know, and
part of that, though, is recognizing and meeting yourself where you're at and letting the judgments of what should or what could,
of course,
really letting all those judgments go.
Yes. And I know that.
You're not hard on yourself at all, eh?
But I can't help it. And I can have every logical discussion about, like, okay, that person ran, that person had a scholarship for running in college. Like, you know, they've been running since they were walking and, you know, all of that. But it's just there, you know, and sometimes, and I know I'm not the only one. And so sometimes you have to step back a little bit too and just be like,
mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm following too many talented people. And it's making me take away from my own accomplishments, and it shouldn't. And I would
right.
tell anybody else it shouldn't. But, you know, there's that hard wiring in your lizard brain that is really hard to ignore.
Now, with that hard wiring,
mm-hmm.
you were very candid with me before the show.
Yeah.
And I have your full permission to discuss
yeah.
this on the show. Just so everyone knows, I'm not surprising, doing any surprises
yeah.
here.
No.
I don't believe in that. So you, I think one of the reasons, if I understood you correctly, that running also and exercise also came into your life was for your own emotional and mental health. Can you talk to us
right.
a bit about that?
Yeah. So there's a lot of mental illness just in my genetic makeup. My grandparents were Holocaust survivors. You know, so it's always been, I think, part of our DNA. And I've always been an anxious person. But I never really addressed any of that. And I started, I started running and there were lots of good things, but I was still feeling not super mentally healthy. So I was like, well, I will just keep running because everyone says the exercise is good for depression. And there was a huge part of me that didn't want to admit that I might have depression because nobody wants to admit that they have depression. I was one of those people who's like, that means I'm weak and I can't handle life and I'm not going to do that. And so I'm just going to pretend it doesn't exist and I'll just run it away. And all I was doing was working too much and then running after work and I was exhausted and it's still depressed. And so I eventually, well into my 30s, finally, you know, said to my doctor, I need to do something. And she wanted me to talk to someone and I was like, nope, not doing that. So she said, all right, well, let's try some medication. So we tried some medication and it helped. It took the edge off. And then a year later, I was like, I think maybe I need to talk to someone. And the combination of the two helped. And I think that, you know, talking to, you know, having a therapist helped probably more than the medication. Medication helped really well at first. It really pulled me out of, I think just pulled me out of that depression. But it also kind of like deadened things. So it was nice that I wasn't like super like crying and emotional about stuff. But then it was just like, your dog might have cancer. Oh, like I should have more of a reaction than, oh, you know, that kind of thing. So it was nice at first because I finally felt like I had some control over my like response to just life. You know, just really understanding the emotions that I was having and the feelings that I was having and how to respond to those feelings. And, you know, learning that those feelings will always be there. It's just about how you respond to them. That was a hard lesson. I was like, no, I'm coming to you so you can make me stop feeling this way. And he's like, yeah, I can't. No, that's not going to happen. And that was months after I'd been seeing him. So that was big. And then the other big change that I made was work. I mean, like I was telling you off, you know, before we were on the air, my job was really stressful, and a big part of that was self-inflicted. I'm a perfectionist and people depend on me and I don't want to let anyone down ever. And so I never said no to anything, which gave me more and more responsibilities. And there was a lot of validation in what I did, which I think is why I did it, but it was probably 30% validation, 70% frustration. And so that didn't,
but
that
you did it like a true healer would, you know, really caring about everyone else and putting yourself last.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. And so I knew, like, I knew that I was doing this to myself, but I didn't see a way out of it without disappointing everybody, you know? And then like, what would that mean for me if I left this successful job? Like, who does that? Who leaves a successful job that they're good at, that people like them at, that they make good money at? Like, I just couldn't wrap my head around it. 'Cause then what would I do? Like, sure, I might be happier, but what would I do with myself? And then I had to move to California because my husband got a job here, and California State doesn't like that I went to school in Canada. So, I'm still arguing with them 6 months later and I don't have a license. So I'm not working. I am happier.
And I love that because, you know, I think it's really funny that when sometimes life steps in, sometimes, you know, the world steps in to help you do what you need to do. I think it's kind of humorous for me at this point in my life, hearing this story and hearing you and able to recognize, like, you're still fighting it. Life has stepped in and told you to calm down, take a break, don't do anything right now, sort yourself out, and yet you're still fighting that.
I'm fighting it because I feel like I told you before, like, it wasn't my decision. And there's a piece of me that is like, if I don't see this through to the end, like if I see this through to the end and they still say, you're not getting a license, then I did everything I could.
Yeah. But no, I see that.
You know,
I get that.
Even though, like, and also I think about, like, well, what are the ramifications? Like, then what? Like, then I can never practice again, potentially.
Right.
And I don't know that, like, I'm ready to retire completely from the profession.
Right.
But maybe I don't have that
choice.
You know, so, you know, there's a big piece of me that wants to go, okay, the universe is clearly telling you that this is done. Like, just stop. It's enough. move on. But there's another piece of me that's like, no, that's a cop out. That's just the easy way out. So keep fighting.
Right. And sometimes it's not that it's necessarily done, but it's detaching enough so that you can, and I hope you are, enjoy the time and take care of yourself instead of, you know, stressing out because it's not going the way you wanted it to or planned it to or thought it would.
Right. And I'm getting better at that the more this drags out. It's just every time I have to have an interaction with the licensing board, then I get incredibly frustrated because I'm like, this is all unnecessary. Like, it shouldn't be this challenging. I've been working for 14 years. I'm a very qualified person, and they don't care about any of that, and they won't hear any of it. And so then I get frustrated with the interaction.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, I need to prove that you're making a mistake by making it this hard. You know, you should not be treating me. It's the way I'm being treated that makes me angry.
Right.
And so then I'm like, well, if I give up, they'll just win, which I think I don't even think it's that. I don't think they care. You know, I don't think it's not a personal vendetta. It's bureaucracy.
No. Yes,
and that's,
exactly.
You know, and so you can't fight bureaucracy because they don't care. So that's my struggle. Yeah.
Yes, but I also know that you have lots of exciting things in the works for yourself
I do.
And for the world. So that's all good.
Yes, and that's changing things. And running, you know, helps with my mood. You know, it can sort of, it's like moving meditation, you know, cause you have to focus, you know, you can be thinking about work or whatever it is, but at some point it kind of drifts because you have to be thinking about your breathing and your pace and your, you know, other things. And then sometimes I'll be thinking about completely random things. Sometimes I'll forget that I'm running, which seems really weird, but I'll be so engrossed in thought about something. I'm like, oh, right. I'm running. Usually that only happens on long runs, you know, 8-10 miles or more. I'm like, oh yeah, whoops, I just ran a mile, which is nice, but it's probably not. I mean, I think I'm probably keeping track of my surroundings. It's just all sort of under the surface. But, you know, I think
that's when we go into a meditative state.
Yeah. So that's another piece.
You're doing things unconsciously, but you're still aware. We do that driving a lot, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. Yeah. So I do think that that's another piece of, you know, if you can find that exercise that you really enjoy, you really can lose yourself in it. And it's not, for me, it wasn't a cure for depression in any way. And I think talking to someone and then changing jobs was what I needed to do. And, you know, I was able to get off of medication, which is nice because I don't really like being on medication. But it did what it needed to do in the beginning. I just lost my train of thought. But it does help. Running does help with my anxiety levels, I think, more so than depression.
Right.
Because it releases, you know, that adrenaline. It like channels it.
Yeah.
And so I do think that that's helpful, but I don't agree when people say, don't take medication, exercise, because I don't think that's true for everybody in every situation. I think that that's not fair to people who really are struggling. And I was doing, I mean, I did that. I tried that for years and it didn't work. So that might be true for you, and that might be true at some point, at some stage, but, you know, trying to convince people that medication is poison and you absolutely shouldn't, you should just exercise, kind of, I think it sets people up for feeling like a failure when they do that and it doesn't work. And then, they're afraid to turn to medication.
Yeah. I think when you look at the overall literature, what a lot of the studies state is that exercising 3 or more times a week for at least 30 to 40 minutes and getting your heart rate up, it helps with mild depression. And I think that's where what people confuse, because there is a big difference between feeling sad and being clinically depressed. And I know that, you know, for people who follow me, I'm not a huge advocate of medication, but I'm not what I would call ridiculous about it either. And there are some times where clients come in and they're clearly in need of medication to help them get going again or to jumpstart.
Right.
I use a lot of homeopathy and energy medicine, and I find those to be very effective. But for some people, they do need medication, and I think we have to be very cautious as to how we actually advocate, because we, in our world, and I'm very outspoken about this, we need every system. And you can't have one system without the other. You need a very good alternative complementary health system, and you need a very good allopathic system. And the more we can start working together, this is a huge frustration for me, but the more we can start working together, the better off everyone will be in terms of their healing.
Of course.
And the less stress you put on everyone, depending on what their own decision is, because ultimately it is only you that can make the right decision for yourself.
And you won't know if you don't try.
Right.
And you don't know how you're going to respond to different interventions, you know? And you don't know how you're going to respond from one situation to the next, or 1 year to the next, or, you know, you might have a trauma that triggers something, or, you know, there are all these different things, and we still don't talk about it. Like, I still would prefer not to talk about it, even though, you know, there's still stigma, there's still shame around mental health issues.
Yes.
I mean, it's still there. And I think that's part of the reason I don't, like, throw it out on social media. I mean, I also think, like, people don't, not everybody needs to know. It's my own personal story that I share with the people I choose to share it with. But I also, it's also because I don't really want everyone to know that I struggle with it.
Right. I chuckled a bit earlier when you said when you were working with your therapist and they said, well, you're always going to feel, so let's learn how to deal with the feelings, because, you know, when those negative feelings come on, the first thing you want to do is shut them down. It's like, okay, how do I get
of
rid of
course.
This
way? How do I stop feeling this way?
Exactly. This feels horrible. How do I stop? And I think that's very real as well. But I also think a lot of that, you know, we have to learn to be comfortable in that unknowing. But the more we try to hide it or fight it or pretend it doesn't exist, the bigger it often becomes. I actually have a program coming out called The Anger Revolution, which works, it's a series of videos which walks people through strategies to use when you are feeling angry, upset, frustrated, anxious, fearful, because our body does the same thing for all those emotions, and we don't necessarily recognize that.
And I think that is so important, because I think the draw of, you know, an antidepressant, say, is, you know, for me, it was at first this relief, like you don't have those feelings anymore. Your fight or flight system kind of shuts down. And, you know, having had such a heightened response my whole life, not having that anymore at first was just like, oh, finally, like I feel normal. You know, I'm not having these huge reactions to things. It's such a relief. But like I said, you know, that only lasted a short while. And then I was like, well, I don't care about anything, which is dangerous and not helpful. And so,
it is,
I think that's where like having that trained person to walk you through, okay, you're going to have this emotion. It's okay to have this emotion. Now break it down so that you can deal with it and move on. And that's the harder, that's where the work is. And that's where it's hard. And some days I'm better at it than others, you know? And I had
a similar experience this year. As I talk about kind of regularly on the show, this year has been a really challenging one for me. But it's only been through this year that I realized how much anxiety I actually held. And I've had a lot of success with energy medicine. So what actually happened for me was I felt the anxiety and all of my emotions that I hold in the pit of my stomach actually move from my stomach up into my heart, out of my heart, past my throat. I felt them all move up. It was the weirdest experience. I've never experienced anything like it before. And then I had this huge hole. It was feeling of emptiness in my belly. And for the first time in my life, I kind of went, well, who am I without all this anxiety? Because I didn't even recognize I had anxiety because I was probably born with it.
Right.
So it's been very interesting to learn how to live life differently without the fear and the anxiety that has haunted me. And force is a harsh word, but has taken control of a lot of the decisions I had made in my life due to that fear and anxiety. And now I actually get to make healthier decisions, because my stomach doesn't rule that panic anxiety response, which has been really crazy and fascinating and amazing all at the same time.
That is fascinating.
So we only have a few minutes left.
Okay.
What would be, is there a takeaway you want to give our audience before we start wrapping up?
I know
I'm putting you on the spot. I'm putting her on the spot, people. She was not prepared for this question.
Don't wait as long as I did. I was in my mid-30s before I pushed myself past my comfort zone. Don't do that. Do it now.
Try one thing.
You know, I wasted my 20s. I mean, I didn't waste them completely. Obviously, I got married,
I got
a master's degree, I got a career, I moved, you know, but there's, you know, I'm sure you've heard of Brené Brown and, you know, all the vulnerability that she talks about. And I still think that's a big challenge to be vulnerable, but just, you know, if you find something that you like and there's probably a community for it, even if you just start out online. I think that's a really safe way to put yourself, quote unquote, out there. You know, you just join a group online. And then if you don't like it, it's very easy to leave and try something else. You know, but if you have that much, you know, as much sort of trepidation as I did about trying new things, I think that there's so many ways to do it and still not feel like you've completely opened yourself up. And then as you get more comfortable, then, you know, you push yourself to that next step. And that next step, just like with, like we were talking about with, you know, the metaphor with the race, it's just getting to that next water station. You know, just remembering to look at the first step and then the next step, and not getting overwhelmed with all of the those anxiety ridden questions like, well, what if people are rude, and what if they don't like me, and what if I don't fit in? And I mean, you can certainly go and do it in person, but if that feels like too much, I think it's really easy now to just go online. You know, find a website you like and comment on it, you know, and then you'll see what other people are commenting on, and you can see where they are. Like when I first started blogging, I would see that someone Are you still there?
I'm still here. I think we lost you for a little bit.
Oh,
but
there we go.
We're back.
Okay. Sorry.
And you know what? I love that. I think that's a great wrap up. The importance of moving past your comfort zone, and don't wait, because the longer you wait, the harder it gets. And
yes.
It is so much precious time.
Yep.
Feel free to join
Absolutely.
Julie in her quest to be athletic on her blog, tri-ing2beathletic.com. And you can feel free to join me at brainhealthyclinic.com or on my Facebook page at Brain Healthy. Julie, thanks so much for joining me today. It's been a great call. So thank you very much. You've made some really amazing points, and I wasn't necessarily ready for everything that came out, which is really nice as well. I'm glad you're comfortable enough to share on the show. And for everyone else, we will see you next time on Brain Healthy. Have a great week.
I can do anything, I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want, I can be what I want to be.
Coach on Fire Radio.
The new Carl's Jr. California Classic Double Cheeseburger. It's not for everyone. If you think kale salad is classic, it's not for you. And it's not for you if you hate the idea of sunny beaches and girls in bikinis in winter. But if you like two slices of American cheese, Thousand Island lettuce, tomato, and onion on two charbroiled beef patties, it's for you. The California Classic Double Cheeseburger. Just $2.49 at Carl's Jr. Price and participation may vary. Tax not included.
At Les Schwab Tires, we don't just sell tires. But our sign isn't big enough for the name Les Schwab Tires, Brakes, Alignment, Shocks, Rims, and Batteries. And that would also leave off the how we do it part, which would read Les Schwab Honest, Friendly, Trustworthy Tires, Brakes, Alignment, Shocks, Wheels, Batteries, and Popcorn. We could shorten it to Les Schwab Popcorn, but that might just be confusing. So for now, we'll stick with tires. Les Schwab Tires. Doing the right thing matters.